No, right?
There you go.
Oh, perfect. Well, thank you. And you guys, everyone, welcome to the October LHON Live Conference Call. So excited, and I cannot believe it's already October. So just wanted to do some quick welcome introductions. I'm Jessica Loomer, one of the co-hosts with Andy Marks, who you guys met earlier tonight. Andy?
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
And Maria Johnson?
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Maria.
Hi.
So just wanted to thank everyone for being here tonight. It's going to be a fantastic call. I'm really looking forward to hearing from our guest speaker today, which is Tony Wright, and really excited because he has a different perspective. He is actually the father of a son that has LHON. So I'm really excited to hear his perspective of, you know, how it's affected the family, how it affected him as a parent that has sight, and kind of telling us his trials and tribulations and the journey along the way. So without further ado, I'd love to introduce Tony to us and share his story with us.
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, this is really a story about all the things that happened in the last 4 or 5 months. And it's really kind of amazing, but there's so much of it that's a result of getting connected with you all. So a little bit about me first. I am 68 years old. I had a 35-year career at a place called Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Very fortunate to do that. About 10 years ago, I decided I wanted to do something different when I retired, and so I am. I build golf clubs for people, and I help people learn how to putt, which is way different than what I did. Retired from Oak Ridge National Lab 6 years ago. I'm married to Diane, and you're going to hear a little more about that later. She just retired, but she had an amazing career in the adult daycare world. And we have 2 sons from my previous marriage, Kevin, who's age 40, and he's the one we're going to talk a lot about tonight, and David, who's age 37, and I have 2 stepdaughters, Jessica and Jenny, and 4 absolutely perfect grandkids. So I'm going to kind of go back a little bit, because it all fits in everything, to last December. And Kevin, who is now affected with LHON, lived in Missoula, Montana, but luckily, he decided in December of last year to move to Nashville. He's got a lot of close friends there. Those of you that know about Nashville, and you'll know more about it, I guess, next year in June. It's a tremendous art community, a tremendous music community, and he's into art and music and loves all those things. And he's got a lot of friends in Nashville, and he now lives with 2 of his very good friends, one of them who was somebody he went to school with at the University of Virginia. Well, so in May of this year, early May, Kevin started telling us and also telling his mom, Karen Bridgman, that he was having trouble seeing, and he was having especially trouble seeing things far away. If he kind of squinted when he got close to things, he could see okay. But, you know, our initial thought was, well, he hadn't gotten new eyeglasses for a long time. And he worked long hours in a Nashville restaurant he's actually still working at. You know, so maybe he's got eye strain or something like that. And things did not kind of click right away. But somewhere in a month or so after that, some things clicked from the past, mainly that Kevin's grandmother, Helen Eckel, had lost her sight about 40 years ago. And, you know, we didn't really think too much about that for the longest time. And actually, she gained her sight back after a couple of years, I think. But we really, at the time, you know, actually we had moved from Minneapolis, and it was right around the time that Helen lost her sight. And so things kind of got lost in the shuffle, you know. And so we really didn't understand about labors and didn't understand about LHON and any possible connection with what was going on with Kevin. And somewhere in that month or so after his eye problems, I know Kevin asked his mom, you know, something's definitely going on with my eyes, and tell me about Grandma. And his mom, Karen, you know, immediately kind of got on the web at that point and started finding references to labors. And, I think I did too. And it just seemed that this was possibly something that was what was doing things. But, you know, we didn't know. We had no idea. You have to get tested, as we all know, to find out what's really going on. So somewhere in the sort of late May time or something around there, he had an eye exam, just a standard eye exam. The doctor had no idea what was causing his eye problems. But again, it was kind of fortunate that the doctor said, well, maybe you ought to go to a neuro-ophthalmologist. And there's a really great one in Nashville, a guy named Dr. Longmire. And Dr. Longmire at the time, and when we met with him, said, you know, he actually did have one patient with LHON, and so he had some familiarity. And so he ordered some blood work for Kevin, and this took about a month to get done. He had an appointment sort of like mid-July. And all of this stuff was kind of sinking in, right, because he couldn't see. And, you know, like any parent, you're kind of wondering what the heck's going on. And you have your times when you're kind of, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. But so a lot of, you know, after that, you know, even though I know this is tough for him and it's been tough for us, but a lot of really incredible things happened related to connecting with the LHON community. About mid-June, I have to admit that I was pretty sure the blood work was going to show that Kevin had LHON. And one day I kind of got on the computer and I said, there's got to be an LHON Facebook page, right? And so I found it. I got on the LHON Facebook page, and up in the top right, I guess, part of the page, it said, LHON Annual Conference, June 30, Alexandria, Virginia, which was incredible because Diane and I actually were just in the midst of planning a trip to Maryland because we had a very close friend who I worked with in my, you know, in my Oak Ridge National Laboratory life, who had died of cancer in November 2016. And he decided that nobody was going to have a funeral for him. They were going to have a Life is Good party. And they planned this Life is Good party for early June of this year. So I got on, you know, which is the absolute connection with going to the conference. I talked to, I think it was a lady named Tanya Hanscom, who is part of the conference organization, and she linked me with Lissa, and I think Lissa actually called me shortly after I emailed her, and she said, be pleased to hear from me, and, you know, said a lot of things about registering for the conference. And Diane said, and I realized that we just had to go to the conference. So on June 29, and this was actually supposed to be Diane's last day and her first day of essentially retirement from being the executive director of an adult daycare center in Knoxville. So instead of just kind of pulling things and relaxing, we drove to Alexandria. And that night I decided, well, what the heck, let's go to the – there was an evening event at the conference hotel. And Lissa, you may or may not remember. I mean, I walked in and you were there, and Lindy Dubois was there from Emory University, and they both had a big part in all the neat things that have, you know, that have helped Kevin out since we attended the conference. The conference was, I mean, it was kind of mind blowing. It was amazing, but there were a few things that I think both really affected Diane and I as we were there. We sat down for breakfast with a mom and her sister, and the mom talked about how her five-year-old, I can't remember if it was a son or daughter, but had just been affected with LHON, and her sister was at the conference to learn about LHON, so that just kind of hit us over the head. We got to listen to Dr. Nancy Newman talk, and we got actually sat with Dr. Newman at lunch, and, you know, then we got to hear the story, and I don't remember, I apologize for not remembering our names, and went through those awful times of about a year or so of trying to get the correct kind of a diagnosis for their daughter and the pains that they had, and they cried on stage, and I thought, my gosh, we're just so fortunate that it was possible to learn, you know, the right kind of things about what was going on. And so, you know, there was just a lot of strength of everybody who attended and participated in the conference. So we went home, and we live about 3 hours from Kevin, 2.5 hours from Nashville. We went to his doctor's appointment with Dr. Longmire. who had told us, yes, he does indeed have Leber's. He has the 14484 gene type. Knowing what we kind of knew then, that was about as positive a thing, knowing that he had Leber's as we could get at the moment. But it was interesting also that he said, well, Kevin probably should start taking idebenone if he can find it and obtain it, and it's not likely there'd be a clinical trial for somebody with the 14484 gene type. So I started checking about availability of idebenone, you know, actually even called up some friends locally and said, you know, what could be done in terms of making it if we wanted to get it made in the area. And I emailed Lindy, and Dubois at Emory mentioned to her that Kevin, you know, had the 14484 gene type, because she had mentioned to me at the end of the conference she hoped that's what happened. But I can't remember how it happened or who first said it. Well, but Lindy first said that there actually is a trial in Bethesda, Maryland, with the Dr. Katz, a neuro-ophthalmologist. The Lyra trial, which I wasn't aware of. And either Lindy or Lissa or both said, don't start taking idebenone, because if you do that, you can't be in the trial. It's a little foggy, but actually I think Lissa had mentioned something earlier before that, again, about even before we knew there was a trial, you might want to just wait and see what's going on, because if you take idebenone, you won't be eligible. So, it's just amazing to me that we got fortunate to get the right information about things to be able to make the right decisions. And I think that's what the power is of what's going on in this whole community, is helping people when they sort of jump into these things and they don't know what's going on to find out. So Kevin's now about 2 months into the Lyra's trial. There's no clear changes in his vision yet. He's struggling a little bit with things like smoking. He's cut back, but he hasn't knocked it all out. And the doctor keeps poking at him a little bit and saying, hey, Kevin, you ought to do this. But everybody's got their own journey about how they do all those things. And, you know, I can't force them to do stuff like that. But what an opportunity for him to get to, you know, to go through this trial for 2 years and potentially help him get his sight back. And we could have missed out on all. We could have absolutely missed out on all of this possibility. Some more about him and about us, I guess. He continues to work at a restaurant in Nashville. He actually is a waiter, and sometimes he's actually closes the place down at night. He Ubers to work, Ubers home, or sometimes gets a ride from some people. He's had some meetings with some people in the Division of Rehab Services in Nashville, helping to provide him with a book reader, give him advice on things he can do in the house to make things function better. I think long-term he'd like to find some type of work in the arts community in Nashville. He's got some friends that hopefully are going to help make some connections. You know, all the things about finding other work are probably not as far along as they could be. He just got back last week from going to a wedding in Wisconsin. I was so tickled for him to just do that. You know, he had to fly to Atlanta, fly from Atlanta to Milwaukee. He's just negotiating all those kind of things, I think, really well. But at the same time, you know, I don't see him every day. I don't know what his insides are. I don't truly know the tough times that he has. But I'm really amazed at that he's just doing the best that he can. A couple of weeks ago, I was with him for his second visit to Dr. Katz, and I was really glad that I was, because, you know, I think every once in a while when you're with your kids, and kids, right, 40 years old, and they let their guard down a little bit and say something that, you know, you're lucky to be around. And he said, you know, Dad, I'm just kind of doing the best I can every day, and that's sort of the best that I really can do right now. I think as a parent, and maybe a parent sort of in the 2000s area where we maybe a little more engaged with our kids or our older kids than we would be maybe 20, 30 years ago. We kind of like everything to sort of work itself out, work it out on our timeline, right? That I know that's not going to happen. But I'm just glad that he's doing everything he can, you know, to be as positive as he can and just kind of keep plugging along and doing as best as he is. You know, so I no surprise. I mean, I've had hard times. I've cried. I've been down about things related to where he is. But the biggest thing to me right now that I try to do every day is just simply to set a little time aside and think and pray about both him and his brother. And, you know, both that he's okay, but also his brother, you know, his brother David is a very successful orthopedic physician assistant in Georgia. And so now his brother knows, you know, there's a possibility that he's going to be affected at some point. He doesn't know if, he doesn't know when, but there's a possibility. And I think David is doing the best job he can, too, to just be okay, take care of his kids, take care of his life, make sure he's got things, you know, kind of in a good place. And, you know, I didn't talk much about my ex-wife, Karen Bridgman, but she also is, she has a sister who has four kids. And so those four kids can be, obviously. And it's kind of comforting that if, at a minimum, you know, they got knowledge of what, they have some knowledge about what might happen. You know, maybe things that they can do to do their best so that they don't put any other stressors on their bodies so that they won't be affected with labors. But, you know, they don't know. But at least they know somewhere that they can turn in the future if something happens to help them, right? So, I mean, that's kind of the story from May to about now. You know, I went back in the beginning. It's such an amazing blessing to me that Kevin isn't in Montana. He's surrounded by people all the time that care about him in Nashville, you know, and particularly the people he lives with, but, you know, lots of other friends. He's got a lot of avenues besides work that he enjoys. He actually took me to a concert at the Ryman. Diane and I to a concert at the Ryman for my birthday in August, which was a fabulous experience there. He needs to take me there more often. but you know, he's doing okay, and I think a lot of the reason he's doing okay, and I think a lot of the reason that, you know, as a parent, it's as good as it's going to be is to be engaged with all you folks that to share and talk and try to help each other out. So that's my story.
Oh, well, thank you. That was, I couldn't agree more. We talked about it yesterday. Like, there is nothing better than having amazing people that support you and totally get it. And Annie Marie and I say this every single conference call, that it's such an amazing experience to be able to be surrounded by people that completely get it and that pick us up when we're feeling a little down and give us some tips and tricks along the way. And so it's awesome, and that's why we love doing this call. And I totally agree. Your kids are always your kids, because my mom still bosses me around, but she says, hey, you're my kid. You can do what I say.
Yeah.
And I'm 31, so we're always kids, for sure. But it was awesome just to hear your perspective and your story. And it's cool, you know? Like, it's obviously a very proud dad, but still a great perspective just to kind of hear that, you know, so many people have this perspective maybe of, like, their kids being younger or it happening to them when they're younger and things like that. So it was great for us to hear a different perspective. So thank you for sharing.
Well, you're welcome. I mean, it's so important to be engaged with what you're all doing. I just have to keep being part of it. So I'm just glad to, you know, if it helped anybody, I'm appreciate it. I'm appreciative.
Absolutely. You know, I'm sure you definitely did. I do want to open it up to everybody if they had any questions for Tony. Anyone wants to chirp in?
Hey, Tony, it's Wayne. I was just wondering, was there any trigger or anything that happened to Kevin prior to his eyesight loss?
Well, yeah, probably. I mean, he probably drank more than he should, and he probably smokes more than he should. And, you know, when we sat down with Nancy Newman and had lunch and said, you know that he smokes. I mean, I love Kevin dearly, but she put her hands over her head and said, "Oh my God, he's gonna stop it." You know, you can't guarantee that's the trigger, but it sure would have been nice. And you know, it's funny. I mean, how do you tell somebody? I mean, if we had known 5 years ago or something, well, you would. You might not. This might not happen to you if you stop. Will people do that? They probably won't. Well, would they? Right? I mean,
sure.
It takes getting some kind of bang on the head to make big changes, I think, for a lot of people. So.
Totally agree. Wayne, you're not going to agree with him on how awesome the conference is?
Well, I usually wait till the end. But,
No,
I love the conference, and I'm so happy it's going to be close to me, or Nashville.
Nashville's a great place. You're going to have a great time there.
I might make a comment. It's Ida calling from Canada.
Yeah.
I hear exactly what you're saying about adult children, and I'm the one with the leapers in our family, but I have two daughters, early 40s, and one is a mother with two little boys. So she has definitely her own worries, not only for herself, but also for her sons. My other daughter is single, and she doesn't smoke, but she goes camping, and she likes her wine, and I know that we were fortunate to have 2 weeks of superb weather just recently, and so she took time off work and was telling me how she and a girlfriend were going camping, and how every night they would sit around the campfire and drink their wine, and she even went with me to the neuro-ophthalmologist, and he specifically told both of them, one glass of wine maximum a day if you drink, and no smoking or any sort of smoke of any type, campfire, anything.
Mm. Yeah.
And so she does exactly the opposite. And, you know, you can only say so much, and you think, she hears it in my voice, and she will say, yes, yes, I know. Watch the campfire, watch the wine. What do? You just accept it and think it's, you know, they're adults. But it's hard because you're always a parent.
Yeah, the gift that nobody realized what you were getting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Being a parent.
Yeah.
Well, we were with this Dr. Katz, and I liked one of the things he said, you know, and, you know, maybe it's something somebody else uses or whatever, but he said, you know, Kevin, every time you have a cigarette, you're killing some mitochondria. Maybe you don't want to do that.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, I mean, he said it in a very gentle way, you know. It wasn't like, some of those things are so difficult to let go of. I just think that almost the best thing you can do is just pray as much as you can that they do it and find their way, because it's going to be their way. It's not going to be mine.
It's going to be, yes. Yeah. I'm just making that comment because being like you, a parent, from the parent's perspective, perspective, you worry about some of the things that they do.
Yeah.
Especially knowing that they are carriers and they could be affected any time. And so, you know, not only worrying about the grandchildren who are little boys, but the daughters as well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, yeah, it's a pretty bit interesting, but different.
This is Maria. I'll speak up. You know, I just this week got into a discussion with my 18-year-old daughter. Some of you know her. And she loves going to bonfires.
Uh-huh.
Loves. And I just cringe every time. And it's not just one over the summer. We're talking her friends do it every weekend. And every time she goes, I said, you know how I feel about this. You've been talked to. And I even went as far as we were driving in her car. Of course, she was driving me because I'm the affected one. And I said, and I just got so fed up. And I said, do you like driving? She goes, yeah. And I go, oh, just checking, because I liked driving too. Like, how bad is that as a parent? But I was just like, yeah. But I was like, you know, you need to understand. Plus, which, you know, the community doesn't, you know, I've not made a big announcement, but my nephew was just affected, my sister's 18-year-old son. And he, only a couple of months ago, right before he was going to college, and that's a whole nother call. But, you know, so now we have the next generation. Now we have their cousin affected, my kid's cousin. And, you know, they both, you know, took it differently and not easily. But I still I want to throw so much in her little brain. But I also don't want to freak them out either.
No.
So, yeah. So I just had that conversation about the bonfires.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, you know what can happen. You know what can happen. But, you know, again, she went. She ended up going. Mm-hmm. And I just went, No, exactly. And I said, you know the consequences. And I left it at that. And I felt horrible really digging into her. But, you know, if in 6 months she comes to me and says, Mom, guess what? Well, you know, I'm going to be really upset. but anyway, you know, even the 18-year-olds, they're, you know, they want to be big boys and girls and think they can make their own decisions. And that's fine. But this is a totally different ball game. These are risk factors that you can avoid, you know. So, yeah. So anyway. Feel free to use the driving comment. No,
yes, no.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad.
I hear you so well when you say that, and I think, oh, the sarcasm made me slipped out again, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was.
You just can't help it. And
no,
you
can't.
How stupid can you be? And I thought, well, after she came with me to the ophthalmologist, and he sat there and told her all this, then you turn around and you do it. I'm going, okay.
And yeah,
like,
yeah, I know.
Go to the football games, and she's not even into football, but she likes to go to the games because it's a social. So they all go for drinks, and I'm thinking, you're harming yourself, but...
I know, yeah. My daughter's already planning her 21st birthday in Las Vegas, and I said, oh, great. Yeah, go to a smoke-filled casino and, you know, drink your brains out. Oh, that sounds great. You know, that's a few years away, so I'm hoping she changes her mind.
the mall has dropped by that time. Oh, the light has gone on by that time. I'm not sure if they fully understand what it really is like for us, because they see us moving around and doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we can't drive, we can't read, but we manage, and maybe they don't have the perception that we expect them to have or the understanding we expect them to have.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think many of us, we set a really, really good example for our friends and family. And that's a good, good thing. But then people tend to forget that we have, you know, a visual impairment. And so it's not in their minds all the time. So, you know, it's good and bad, you know. I don't know, walk into a wall a few times, you know, make sure they know, you know, like, yeah, see what happened? See? Did you see that? I don't know. You know, it is, again, going, whether they're 40, you know, 30, 20, 18, 17, minor ophthalmologists have talked to my kids both, you know, and they're just, you know, you can only say so much. I mean, besides handcuffing them to the house or something, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, yeah. At least we can also laugh about it a little bit here on the conference.
Yeah.
Call, even though.
Right.
It hurts, but.
Yeah.
Well, I will mention, too, you know, Dr. Katz has two people in the trial so far in Bethesda. I mean, that's kind of amazing that, you know, I would have thought there might be some other folks that would qualify for that. So, I mean, it's kind of really amazing that Kevin's in that. Still kind of blows my mind that we were able to sort that out and get him there. It's a little trek to get there, but
to be worth it in the long run, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Worth it in the long run, right? Yeah.
Didn't I see something recently that naraxone is the same as idebenone, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That it's approved in Israel?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw that on Twitter. I think
yeah,
we were all tagging
like
each other or something like
yeah.
that. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really read the article, but yeah, I think I heard that.
Wow.
Anybody have anything else for Tony?
I do. It's Lisa from Canada. Tony, you mentioned that Kevin is still working as a waiter.
Yeah.
How does he do that? Like,
that's
impressive.
He's got a magnifier, too, that he's using some. And, you know, it's like people figure out ways. He memorizes things so that he can do it. I mean, he can see. For example, you know, we flew to Maryland the last time. And he maneuvers his way around the airport reasonably well. You know, he can see some. It's just that. It's not perfect, but I think he has a pretty big magnifier that he uses. I took him to an Apple store, and he's starting to learn voiceover a little bit, and which I think he's starting to appreciate that. He's got whatever the magnifier is that he uses on his PC, so that helps him some with that. He hasn't really pursued. I think at some point, I mean, if he continues there. There's probably resources that the state can provide to make things even better. But you know, that really brings up something else, too. One of the very few times I've seen him be a little down, he talked about some of the people in the restaurant who he's waited on that, you know, didn't just, like, appreciate that where he was coming from, you know. And I don't know exactly how to describe it, but he was really angry. You know,
yeah.
Said, you know that they just don't understand, you know, what's going on with me and what I have to do to do the things that I'm doing. And it one of the very few times I ever saw him be bitter in the last couple of months. Kind of interesting.
It's understandable, though.
Oh yeah. You know, hey, you know this. You know, don't put me down for something that's, you know,
can't help.
I didn't really get to pick, you know. So,
yeah, didn't sign up for it, as we say.
That's right.
Is he part of the LH1 group?
The LH1? No, he hasn't done that yet.
No.
I've mentioned to him, and he's just not ready for that, I guess. So, you know, we'll see. It's another one of these things about, you know, find your time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Hi, Tony. This is Bob Banks. I'm actually from California, but I'm in Atlanta this week. So doing
okay.
But, yeah, thanks for sharing your story because I've only been in this in this for a family of ours for 2 years now, and I don't know if I've ever heard a father of an affected share yet, so it was great to hear your story from your perspective. But one thing I really want to, you know, pride you on is that I could feel the positivity coming out of your voice, and, you know, that really provides a lot of hope and hope for your son, I'm sure, and as well as keeping that positive attitude for him. And I'm sure that's reflecting on his attitude looking forward, that that there is hope and you can still, or he can still lead a normal life and move forward with a lot of, you know, technologies and stuff. It's just a different way, you know. So I like your attitude.
Yeah, it was, I hadn't thought about this for a long time, but I think it was sometime maybe late May or so, I don't remember when it was, that we first, you know, after he became affected and first drove to Nashville to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't know what it was going to be like to walk in the door.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I was really scared.
Yeah.
And I think both Diane and I immediately realized that he's just kind of, you know, he's just kind of getting on, you know. It's just,
right.
If you didn't know that he was affected, you probably wouldn't think it. And you know, one of the examples was going to the grocery store with him. I've done that a couple of times.
Right.
And you know, so he kind of gets up close to things, and he finds this stuff. And once in a while, he needs a little bit of help for this or that. But he just kind of does it, you know.
Yeah. No, it's
but
it's
that
great.
that first time, boy, of walking up to him and just not knowing what to expect, that was
great.
That was something.
And I was going to say that because I remember when my parents, who don't live near me, but when you know, I have the same mutation as your son, by the way, and you know, it was probably. It was in the first year, but it was probably towards the latter end of the first year. My parents arrived, and, you know, after a few tears and stuff, my mom was not sure, am I going to walk out and stumble across, you know, over the curb? Am I going to fall flat on my face? Am I going to bump into trees? And she didn't know. And so it was just a lot of discussion and experimentation, and, you know, like, and then they realized, oh, you see more than you think. And, there's an individual, I forgot his name, he's in this LA Twin group, but he's up in Cleveland or somewhere up there, and he called me early on, and he said, could be an older gentleman, I think, and he said, you know, I tell people, I see better than you think I do, but I don't see as well as I want to, or something like that.
It was Paul, Paul Walker.
Yeah,
yeah.
Could be.
Yeah.
But that put it in perspective, because sometimes I even think that, gosh, I'm seeing pretty well, and then I go to read a sign or a menu or something like that. Okay, never mind.
I totally get that, too.
Yeah. But I'm kind of curious, Tony, what type of technology devices or assistive technology devices or software do you know does your son use? I heard a magnifier.
Well, he's got he doesn't have JAWS at this point or whatever, you know, and I've heard of that and I don't know a lot about it. But there is just an internal magnifier in that you can turn on in the PC to get the levels of in the, you know, the regular PC rather than an iMac or whatever. He's found some other, I forget what the magnifier is besides voiceover stuff in his iPhone. He got a new iPhone 7 a while ago, which he had a 4 before that. It's great that he's got something a little bigger and easier to use. So he uses some of that. There's this software called AI Setting or Setting AI or whatever that Microsoft developed.
King AI,
King AI. And he's using that a little I think, you know, I haven't talked about him for a while, but I think he's really starting to get a little more engaged with using voiceover, like I said. Everything that I've heard is that that's really kind of the, you know, the Cadillac thing for helping out.
One of them, certainly one of them.
Yep.
And we went to an yeah. Apple store, and they walked us through a little bit of it, but, you know, not quite mm-hmm. enough. But.
That's great. Well, he's fortunate to have you and his parents and have your assistance and your support there. So keep it up.
Thanks.
Thank you for sharing.
Oh.
You have any idea what size monitor he uses on the PC?
Oh, on his PC?
Yeah.
He's just got a regular laptop. He hasn't, you know, delved into getting something bigger. He's just got probably a 14, 15-inch monitor.
Okay.
Yeah, when he was making his airline reservations to go to Wisconsin, I was there, so I had to help him a little bit with that. But he was trying to get through it all, but some of it was a little tough, at least at this point. You know, but he was trying to use the magnifier to do some of that kind of stuff.
Anybody else?
This is Marie. I'll say one last thing to Tony before you might open up to anyone else. Just be sure that your son Kevin knows, and I'm sure he already does, but just to reiterate for everyone in this group that, you know, if he wants to connect with anybody in the group, someone his age who's been affected for a while and can point him in the right direction of any technology, apps, iPhone voiceover help, you know, please let him know that there are people yeah. waiting by their iPhones to be able to talk to folks who are newly affected to get them, you know, at least aimed in the right direction and can make them comfortable with knowing that there are things that can help you, you know, to not struggle with some of those kind of issues. So please let him know. He doesn't have to be part of, you know, on Facebook or anything like that. Obviously, with Lissa's help and different things, he certainly can be connected to folks who are more than happy to talk to him.
That's great. I really appreciate yeah. you mentioning that again. It's easy to forget
yeah.
about that part, but yeah.
Sure, it is.
It's a great idea, Maria. Well, if no one has anything else, I will have Andy turn off the recording. This is awesome.
Well, thanks.
Can we have Lissa? Is Lissa on the line? I'm sorry. Is Lissa on the line?
I thought she was.
Is she?
Yes. 6 minutes. I'm muted. I
wanted to see if I know you've updated the cover photo on the group, but since we're still recording and we're not quite on by recording, is it okay to talk about the conference next year in Nashville and how that's just going to be a wee bit different?
Absolutely.
Ooh, yeah.
yeah, sure. No, like Maria's saying, we're going to do a new format in Nashville next year. It's going to be an exciting opportunity to just to try a new way of doing things. And really what we wanted to do was find the best format that would allow us to sort of accomplish a number of goals all at once. We wanted to keep it sort of really close to a weekend, and we wanted to optimize the opportunity to have more and better networking. We get a lot of feedback that while the conference is great, it's a really long day, and people's brains get really fried by the end of the day. And on the one hand, people adore the opening get-together, but on the other hand, after that, you're sort of locked in the room in meetings and not a ton of time to chat, maybe other than a couple of breaks and lunch. So so all those things said, we're going to do a different format in Nashville, and what we're going to do is start registration, like, at 9 or 10 in the morning on Thursday, and then we'll have a more formal networking starting around 11, and then we'll have lunch for an hour. So everyone can just sort of casually, you know, get in and get together and start connecting. And then we'll do a half-day programming that afternoon. And then that night, Thursday night, people can either, like, hang out at the hotel, and there'll be a combo networking event for LHON and the broader UMDF community, mitochondrial disease community. Or people can, you know, go out with old new friends in town and enjoy Nashville. And Tony, we're probably going to be hitting you up for questions about, you know, how do we, you know, where's the place to go? What will people want to do? And then the next morning, Friday morning, same thing. There'll be continental breakfast, and we'll do a morning of programming. And then people can kind of go either way they want to go. I don't know how some number of people, about 10% of the people who came to conference last year, stayed for the UMDF conference. And hopefully everybody knows that, you know, we have at its core, we have a mitochondrial disease. And while mostly what we have going on is different, it's mostly just vision. At the root of it, it's a mitochondrial disease. And so the United Mitochondrial Disease Foundation is they're running a conference all day Friday and Saturday. And some people want to be a part of that. And so so you'll have the choice to just do what I described for the half day Thursday, Friday, or you can sign up for the whole UMDF conference, and then you can do the LHON plus the full mitochondrial Friday, Saturday, and learn a lot about mitochondrial disease and different aspects of mito, and meet up with mito doctors and learn more about that. So that's what's going to be the options. And I think, you know, several years ago, we really just focused on LHON, but I think over time, more and more people in the group have been building bridges into the UMDF community and the broader issues of mitochondrial disease. And I think it's just a great opportunity that, you know, people could then, if you want to, people could spend Friday afternoon and Saturday going to some of the UMDF sessions, going to the UMDF banquet Friday night, or you could just do kind of hang with the LHON crowd and be done midday Friday, and then, you know, either take off and head home if you want to, or stay, you know, Friday afternoon, evening, through the weekend with friends, you know, kind of whichever way you want to go. But we're trying to keep it simple so that it's not expensive if you want to just come in, do LHON and leave, or, you know, you can do the full UMDF broader meeting, and you can really do either way. So we're trying to provide networking and great LHON content and the opportunity to get more pulled into the broader UMDF community. So it'll be a little bit more choices, a little bit, but all the same stuff, just in a slightly different format. I hope that makes sense.
Hi, Lisa. This is Joe Anderson in from Phoenix, Bryce's mom.
Yep.
I just wanted to ask, and I know it's soon, but do you know who the medical guest speaker will be yet? Because I watched Nancy Newman. She seems very energized and an exciting speaker to listen to. And then Dr. Sadoun, of course. I just didn't know if you guys, what experts were you bringing in?
Quite honestly, we've only gotten so far as setting up the format. The next step is to start talking about content, and anyone is invited to give opinions and suggestions, and that whether that means shoot me a private message or send me an email at lhonpointsavail.com. Happy to hear any and all input. I will say that Dr. Nancy Newman, as you noticed, she was enthusiastic to come to the event this year, and she's already said to me, I plan to be there next year. And I'm like, good, I want you there. I'm sure everyone would want you there. And the people who are at conference may have heard, the UMDF has what's called the Scientific Medical Advisory Board, so they have a bunch of mito docs on that board. And a couple years ago, I was at a neuro-ophthalmology conference representing LHON, trying to make sure those folks know that our community exists, but when a new person is diagnosed, or even an existing patient, just let them know about us. And so Dr. Filiewski, who heads up the science piece at UMDF, he came for a day, and I introduced him to Dr. Newman, and they had a great conversation. So anyways, he invited Dr. Newman to be on the broader UMBF Scientific Medical and Advisory Board. So that's another reason why she'll be at the event to meet with that
board. Oh, great.
Yeah, so she's getting more and more plugged in, so which is great on so many levels, because A, it brings her to the event for another reason. B, it brings
right.
one of the LHON specialists in the world talking to the MITRE docs, because sometimes the MITRE docs, they know LHON is a mitochondrial disease, but they're not neuro-ophthalmologists. And the neuro-ophthalmologists know that it's a mitochondrial disease, but they're not thinking broader system stuff. So it's wonderful in every respect. So long story short, yes, I expect Dr. Newman will be there. And who else? Sometimes it depends on, who's coming to the broader MITO meeting. Like in the past, for instance, Dr. Valerio Corelli from Italy or Dr. Patrick Uyman from the UK. Oftentimes, they'll come to the UMDF just because they want to be there, which is great because then they're already there. And then we can tie
right.
them into our meetings with no additional expense. Same thing.
I don't know, doctors.
So, to be determined. Pardon me?
Yeah, understood. No, we just came back to seeing Dr. Suzuki. We're in the phase three of a genetic trial that I understand. So that's kind of it. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Anyway, they are moving on to phase four, and I didn't know if Dr. Sadoun's schedule is going to be out that far yet, but he's another one, a great speaker to have, but that, that's my two cents for whatever that's worth, but great guy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, I don't know. How's Jeremy doing?
Jeremy's doing awesome. I need to tell Bob Banks that he was missed at Nationals this year for the
wow.
Golf Nationals. But Jeremy played well and just won, I think it was his sixth National Blind Golf Championship. And Frankie Musso from Chicago was a new LHON player there. So he was happy to have, although he was sorry Bob wasn't there, he was happy to have a new LHON competitor in the crowd.
Oh, that's
I
wonderful.
Yeah.
I don't know how anybody can compete with that young man.
He's good. Oh, my.
Oh, he's good. Anyway,
that's awesome.
Great news to see that. Yeah.
Yeah, Tom, congratulations, too, Lisa.
Will do. Thanks.
I don't know if people know, but Jeremy plays with his dad, and what a great partnership, right?
Absolutely, for sure.
Not very many people get that opportunity.
Nope.
And his dad can't tell his son what to do.
Yeah.
People will know more soon. CNN is going to do a little story on the two of them, which will be cute and fun to see. So I'll let you know when that gets put together.
Oh, yeah. Post that. That'll be exciting to watch. I know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bryce really didn't want to compete, but it turns out the Jiu-Jitsu World Championships, and he loves Jiu-Jitsu, that's his thing. But they have started this year a para Jiu-Jitsu competition, aside from the regular one. So he still wants to compete in regular. We'll just see how he can do. But it's exciting that people are recognizing this.
That's great that he's got options. Jeremy's the same way. He likes to compete in both sighted golf and blind golf, and it's great to have both. I hope Bryce can do both. Why not?
Oh, you're right. I know. It'll be fun to watch. But, I'm curious to do in Nashville. It sounds like a fun city.
This is Maria. The gal who's talking, Joe, or you're from Arizona. How old is
your
son, Bryce? How old is your son, Bryce?
He is 21.
And has he been affected for a while, or is he newly affected?
He actually was about 19 and a half when he first became affected.
Okay.
And so it's still high. Rears its ugly head in depression and denial and all of that sort of thing, But he just this fall started back to college, so I'm excited for that.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Well,
good. And my son's name is Bryce, so of course I was connected immediately.
Oh, yeah.
He's not affected, though. But my nephew was in the same position, you know, going to college and all. It's a whole different ballgame.
It really is. Dropped out. It was a good year before he went back. So it's, you know, but their Disability Resource Center has been fabulous, and they just love him.
Yeah.
It's great. So they're offering him all sorts of help, but haven't been as fortunate with our vocational rehabilitation here in the state, unfortunately. That's been going round and round. So, in fact, his counselor said he shouldn't, you know, be going back to school right now because he'll just fail. And I was like, that's all you need to say to my son, though, to get him to do something. So he decided, well, heck with you, and I'm going to do it anyway. So,
well, good for him. Good for him.
Yeah. So we're just struggling along, but yeah, good days and bad days still. So it's your nephew that's affected?
I'm affected as well, but my nephew is affected. He's 18 and he was only affected about 2 months and he started college. Talk about struggle. I should get my sister on the call because the hoop she's had to jump through to get him to college and set up with accommodations was just a circus. I mean, just an intense circus. And he's there. I mean, I haven't heard really anything, whether he's struggling and wants to leave or things are just going great, you know. So he's learning how to use CCTV, voiceover, and different technology as he's adjusting to college. So could you make it easier? So, and getting around campus and blah, blah, blah. So, I just, you know, kind of staying in the background right now. And, you know, my nephew knows I've spoken to him already. He knows my phone's open. But, he's trying to blend into the college life, which is important as well. And you don't want to stand out and all that stuff. So, but from what my kids see on Snapchat or whatever, he looks like he's having a pretty good time and the girls adore him. So I think he's doing all right.
Oh, sure. Okay.
That's a good sign.
That's a good
sign.
No, I know. Oh, well, wish him the best.
So,
I know.
Yeah,
that's
hard. I mean, college is hard enough when you're sighted, but then to go in and have to do everything differently, different ballgame for sure. So, but yeah, I can't wait to get my hands on him and really talk to him. Somebody was saying, Tony was saying the first time he saw his son, well, I feel like the first time I see my nephew, it'll be him and my connection. It's just going to be different now. So, so maybe, I don't know, holidays or something. I'm not sure.
Oh, well, I hope so. I hope that brings you guys really close because he could use your support, I'm sure. Really been great with Bryce's English teacher. She emailed him to do a special project and set aside her classroom plan for the day, but she engaged him and he said it was okay. And then at class, everyone had to pair up and one person would put on blindfold and then sort of have a treasure hunt throughout the campus. They would have to buy a Coke. They would have to go to the library and get online. And so the other person was their guide or, you know, would take notes. And then everyone had to write a short paper on their experience. It was interesting to open up everyone else's eyes.
That is cool.
Isn't that, Jessica? That is so awesome.
That's a pretty amazing teacher.
Yeah, so I'm really impressed with this teacher. I'm going to see what other classes she might be offering later on.
What college is she going to?
Oh, it's just the community college, Paradise Valley Community College here in Phoenix.
That's impressive.
I was pretty happy. She rearranged things just to kind of focus on what it would be like. And I'm like, that's cool. So
And bringing awareness. Bringing awareness just overall to, you know, to kids that age.
Exactly. Exactly. Because they do tend to back away and not know how to approach them. And, you know, it's difficult.
Yeah.
That's a true caring lady, for sure.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when you're in college, you're pretty much on your own. And for her to actually do that, that says a lot for her as a teacher. That's amazing.
Oh.
Good. Your son is very fortunate.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really a nice thing for her to do.
And think of how she's impacted these students' lives, you know, like, when else do you get that opportunity and have to be kind of forced to do things that are super uncomfortable? And so those kids are going to, it's going to be a great impact on them.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I was pretty taken aback by it all. That was really, really nice. So, you know, there's, you know, just that much more understanding out there as there is, you know, negativity.
Yeah.
So it's
right.
All in what you look for.
Yeah. But, speaking of being forced to do things when you're uncomfortable, Jessica, do you want to talk about your weekend coming up? Which I'm sad to say, obviously, I'm not going. But speaking of going polls.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I've done a lot of uncomfortable things in the past week. But this weekend is Dinner in the Dark. So, Joe, if you're free, I would love for you and Bryce and your husband and for everyone to come back down again. It's going to be back at Maggiano, so it's in Scottsdale again. You know, well, the sad part is it's always been the first weekend in October. Well, schedule shifted a little bit, so I'm falling on fall break, so it's kind of a bummer. But the bonus of what's happening is that we have more people donating than attending. So we'll take more money for research. That's fantastic. Dinner in the Dark,
great.
Right? But Dinner in the Dark it's a really fun event. And so everyone is completely blindfolded for three-course meal, so salad and the main entree and then dessert, of course. And you get escorted by firefighters. And let me tell you, these firefighters, this is the fourth year they'll be at the event, and they are one of our biggest donors. They're donating $500 to LHON from East Valley Fire Charities. So, and then they're donating their time. So I do have another person that's donating another $250 to pretty much cover the cost for the firefighters to eat. So they want to make sure that they weren't tapping into any of our monies. And I was like, well, because I've been paying for them. And so somebody else sponsored. So it's really cool because everyone's seen, like, yes, this is a great cause, but yes, we need to support these people. They've been here 4 years. How can I, like, support them at the same time? $750 and some amazing volunteers. So I'm really excited.
Great news.
Yeah, so it's good. At least some really good big donations this year, which has just been fantastic. Definitely some new faces. A lot of teachers, which is why I asked where he's going. Some teachers that are coming this year, and so that's pretty cool. So I'm excited. So we'll see. But I actually, on a personal note, with research and learning, like, how important it is to get research money and to get the funds and put them in the right places and just to kind of be able to pull it back, I actually just started a new job at the University of Arizona in Tucson, actually in the research administration department. So when I talk about, like, raising money and funds and how can we make a difference for LHON and being such a small segment that doesn't have the big fundraisers like breast cancer and things like that, and how important it is for us to make action on that. I've learned so much more learning what, like, the entire back end of what it takes to run a clinical trial, as now I'll be on the back end for all of U of A's clinical trials. So it put a whole different meaning to what does it mean to raise money and what does it take to run a clinical trial to get to that end result. So I have a whole new meaning and I want to raise more money. So it's really cool.
Oh, congratulations. Boy, that sounds great.
Yeah, so it's fun. So I would love for any of you guys to pop on by anytime that you're in Phoenix. I would love to have some LHON friends. I was actually tomorrow I was going to post a throwback when Chris and Maria had attended. It was our first year, so it was really cool. So I'll post that throwback picture. So please feel free to pop on back. I would love to have you. But I will
on that note, I will take us off recording. as I do want to open it up, if there are any other first-time callers or and anybody have any other questions, just so we'll be off recording. Andy, do you mind taking us off?
Yep. Give me just a sec.
Thank you.